sources of law. This morning, we will continue to look at the sources of law, and our focus will be the doctrine of judicial precedence. So remember, we have indicated that there are four sources of law, namely custom, the constitution, legislation, and case law, common law, or loosely referred to as judge-made law. And in understanding how we arrive at the common law, how we arrive at case law, how we arrive at judge-made law, the doctrine of judicial precedence is important, and it must be understood in the hierarchy of the court system, the court structure. So a companion to this lecture is the systems of court. But we're going to speak about the judicial precedence. And what do we mean when we say judicial precedence? We're speaking about legal principles derived from judgments of cases, and this is in the absence of statutes. And that is why it is referred to as case law or judge-made law loosely. Because when we now apply the Constitution and the doctrine of separations of power, we know that in a constitutional arrangement, judges do not in fact make law, they interpret and apply the law. So in the context of the United Kingdom, then you have activist judges because the separations of power is not as sharp as it is in Jamaica, where in that jurisdiction, the parliament is supreme and not the constitution. And even then, it is parliament's role to make law and the court's role to apply and to interpret the law. So, and then we come from a common law tradition, and that is important to note as well, that the United Kingdom is a common law tradition. That means it is based on case law, or again, as we said, loosely referred to judge-made law. But that is a misnomer. So judicial precedence is developed on a case-by-case basis, with court adopting and building on principles from judgment in previous cases. And this is a critical point to make. So if a case is decided in a particular way, and then another case comes before the court with the same set of facts, then that case is likely to be decided in the same way to the previous case. So it establishes also certainty. So system of case reporting now provides written rules identifying principles of common law. So the common law tradition has a series of reports, court reports, and you would notice when we refer to cases in class, we speak about the report from which they are cited and the court in which they were decided and the page number and the name of the case. So that is an idea, an example of how judicial precedents work. There's a case somewhere written in a case report or a report, law report, and that case would be applicable to the facts that are before the court. Of course, if there's a difference, then there can be what we call distinguishing, and we'll come to that later on. So the common law tends to be rigid. It must follow procedures that have been laid down, practices that have been laid down, legal principles that have been laid down, and these are laid down over time. So there's a line of cases that will follow a certain decision, and all similar cases are likely to take on that decision as well, provided facts are the same. So you initiate a process in court by a writ, and that will set out what the legal issues to be decided are and the parties to the dispute. So these procedures are unique to the common law. And sometimes because of the rigidity, it is felt that there is some obstacle to justice. So you can be right, and yet still there might not be a fair outcome. That sounds contradictory, but it is possible. So the Latin term for judicial precedence or the doctrine of precedence is stare decisis. And this, as we have said, is a central concept of the common law as a source of law. So if you're looking for a source of law, you have to go to the stare decisis, the decision that has been made, the doctrine of judicial precedence. And stare decisis literally translates into English, let the decision stand. So the use of precedence means application of the principles of law used in previously decided cases where issues are similar. And I can't emphasize that enough. Approach used in the absence of statute applicable to the issue under consideration by the court. And then now we look at the types of precedence. So precedent is binding. So we have binding precedents. So a judge is bound to apply principles of law found in previous cases. So the judge is not the judge's role to create new law, but they must decide cases in conformity with existing rules laid down in previously decided cases. And another Latin phrase is locus classicus. So you may have a case that is the locus classicus of the particular principle, because that is the case that would have been first decided in a particular way, and it creates the binding precedence for the rest of cases that follow in that line. So an example of binding precedents are decisions of the Privy Council originating from one Commonwealth Caribbean jurisdiction, and that is binding on other jurisdiction in the region. And the simple reason why that is so is that, with the exception of Guyana, and I think latterly Trinidad and Tobago, the rest of the region, and possibly Bahamas, Barbados, that is, the rest of the region subscribe to the Privy Council as its final appellate court. And therefore, if a decision is made in the Privy Council coming out of any of these territories, then it is binding on the rest of the territories in the region. So for instance, Pratt and Morgan would have been binding on Trinidad and Tobago, would have been binding on Barbados, would have been binding on St. Lucia and the other English-speaking Caribbean countries that subscribe to the Privy Council as a final court of appeal. Then we have persuasive precedents. And here, principles contained in judgments which offer guidance and are not binding. They may originate from courts lower in the hierarchy or from decisions of courts in other jurisdictions. So an example, say the Court of Appeal in the United Kingdom or the Court of Appeal in Barbados. A decision coming out of there would be highly persuasive or persuasive precedents where Jamaica is concerned, but it would not be binding precedent on Jamaica because it is not our final court. So, for example, the decision of the Court of Appeal in Barbados is of persuasive authority to the court in Jamaica. And then decisions of the courts in the Commonwealth, Caribbean, and the United Kingdom are regarded as highly persuasive. And I gave you an example of the Court of Lords, the Court of Appeal, that is, in the United Kingdom, not the Court of Lords, the House of Lords, but the Court of Appeal in the United Kingdom would be highly persuasive. And likewise, the House of Lords would be highly persuasive because the judges of the House of Lords populate the Privy Council, which is the final court of Jamaica. So in constitutional matters, precedents from the United States, Canada, India, and the European Court of Human Rights are highly persuasive because of similarity between relevant constitutional instruments in these jurisdictions. So they are similar, and they have similar provisions, and therefore, and in addition to that, the legal tradition are also similar, because these countries, with the exception of the European Court of Human Rights, certainly US, Canada, and India, by in the main derive their judicial system from the United Kingdom. The US, of course, have shifted more to a civil law jurisdiction, but it does have common law traditions still embedded in some of its states, such as the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So decisions of the English court are used as guide to statutory interpretation in the Caribbean, statutes which are based on English law. So that again is showing the relationship between statute on one hand and case law on the other. The difference, of course, being that statutes are made through the parliament, whereas case law are decisions that are arrived at in the court of law themselves. And if there is a conflict between the statute and the common law, then the statute will prevail as the ultimate arbiter. Now, to identify the decision or what is binding, we have to find the decision of the case. And the decision of the case is referred to in Latin as the ratio decidendi. And the ratio decidendi is the statement of principles of law applicable to particular legal problem disclosed by the facts. So when you're looking for the precedence, you have to ask yourself, what was the reason for this decision? What is the ratio decidendi? So the case may have more than one ratio, where more than one reasons are given for the decision. So the ratio is different from the finding of fact and judgment. Judgment is formed by combining legal reasoning and particular facts. And by judgment, we mean whether the person is guilty or innocent, if it's a criminal matter, or whether they are found culpable or not, if it is a civil matter. So the ratio is what binds all subsequent courts. So we have to look now for what is the legal principle on which the case has been decided, and that is the ratio decidendi. And that is to be distinguished from the obiter dicta, which is translated from Latin into English as by the way. The obiter dicta is a statement of law which is by the way. So it does not necessarily have a bearing on the actual decision, but the court, as in the judge, may make an observation that may have a legal basis, but it is not the decision that binds. And you can also have dissenting judgments. So if, for instance, you have three courts sitting, two take a position and one take an opposite position, then the two that take the common position, that would be the deciding factor in relation to that case and the principles on which that case would have been determined. And therefore, one could treat the commentary or the dissenting judgment as obiter, because that does not reflect the law. Now, so obiter dicta does not form the basis of decision in a case, although it may be based on relevant facts. And as I said already, an example of that is a dissenting judgment, and the decision may be contrary to the reasons given for some extraneous purpose. So judicial pronouncements or comments on non-legal matters like morals and public policy. So sometimes a judge may comment on whether a law is sound or it should be amended or it should be reformed. That is obiter dicta. That's their opinion. Principles, means by which the judge evade the doctrine of judicial precedence, is to distinguish the precedent, right? So remember that we have said that judicial precedence is binding. However, for it to be binding, the cases must be similar, the facts must be similar. So if it is that a case comes before the judge and the judges have the view that the case is not on all four with previous cases, then they may distinguish the precedents and they may say in those circumstances the precedents does not apply to these circumstances. So the process of distinguishing between the facts in a case to avoid the application of the existing legal principle distinguishing the precedents. So to distinguish a precedent, the court must point to a material difference in the facts of the case, establishing the precedent and the current case. So in other words, they are making a distinction. They are saying that, look, these facts are very important and they do not match the facts in the precedent case. And therefore, this precedent is not applicable to this case. And then, of course, precedents may be overruled. And this again, as I have said, if there's a conflict between the common law and statute, then the statute takes precedence. So in that context, the statute would overrule the common law. So an example, for instance, is at common law, companies are not allowed to buy back their shares, whereas the statute, the Companies Act of Jamaica, allows that to happen, right? So that's an example. So the overruling affects the rule of law, not just the decision of the case, which is overruled, right? So again, so the point is that the legislation can overrule a line of cases that carry a certain precedence. That is possible. But the courts are usually reluctant to take the route of overruling decisions unless, of course, there's some compelling reason. And usually what happens is that there's a shift in societal values and norms. And therefore, what was previously the line of precedent is no longer followed. And in that case, it will be overruled. Now, the effect of overruling a precedent is as if it didn't exist. Now, it's not going to go back and change all the decisions that were in line with the precedents once it was current, but certainly from the point of overruling going forward, that precedent would no longer be applicable. So decisions can be altered on appeal, and this is reversing a decision because as you will see, the court system is a tiered system. It is a hierarchical system. It runs from top to bottom, and the courts at the top bind the courts in the lower tier. And if you have a decision in the lower court that you're not satisfied with, then you are at liberty to appeal that decision, and the court may overrule that decision on appeal, or it may reverse that decision on appeal. And the overruling and reversing are two different things. So if it overrules a precedent, then that precedent is no longer binding and enforced. But if it reverses a decision, the precedent remains intact, but that particular decision is not applicable to that case, right? So the effect of decision in a case, unlike overruling, which affects the rule of law or legal principle upon which the decision is based. So in other words, reversing a decision affects the decision and it does not affect the precedents, right? If you don't get that distinction, be sure to ask me to clarify it further in class. So the court is not bound to follow earlier decisions where previous decisions reach are per incurium, meaning that they are arrived at through lack of care. So if it is that the judge was not sufficiently careful in applying the law, then in those circumstances, if challenged, it may be set aside as not applicable. So that effectively is the doctrine of judicial precedence. And what we need to take away from this is that decisions in previous cases are binding on future cases that have the similar fact. And there's persuasive precedents, there's binding precedents, there's highly persuasive precedents. Precedents can be overruled. A precedent can be, a decision can be reversed, and in the case that a decision is reversed, the precedent stands, but that decision is not applicable to the particular court case, that is, and in that circumstance, the precedent is not applicable to that particular case. And judges are expected to be deliberate in the decisions that they arrive at, and those decisions must be supported by the relevant authority. And if they are not sufficiently careful, then on the basis of per incurium, then those decisions may be overturned if appealed. So we're going to move on and look at the system of courts, because remember that we said you have to understand judicial precedent not in isolation but in terms of the hierarchical structure of the courts. So that is the next topic that we shall address.